Welcome to Open Your Eyes, a podcast about empowering each of us with the perspective and tools to grow and change. I am so excited for today's topic. It's consumed my thoughts for some time now, and the more I think about it, the more energized I become. And I don't know if this happens to you, but if it does, you know how it feels when you explore something and the deeper you go, the more inspired you feel. It's like a treasure hunt, and you keep finding bits and pieces until you arrive at that epiphany that's full of rich reward. So hopefully this podcast will give you a new perspective and a few tools you can use to think and live better. I often suggest that you could share this podcast with a friend. I do this because it's a great way to connect with others, and it just may be what they need in their life today. Let's get started. Today, I'd like to talk about starting over and the simple principle that life doesn't care if you started early or late. It only matters if you start again. Lee was born in Manhattan in the apartment of his immigrant parents, Celia and Jack. His father worked as a dress cutter. He said that as a child, he was influenced by books and movies, particularly those playing heroic roles. He attended high school in the Bronx. He enjoyed writing and entertained dreams of writing the great American novel one day. He worked part-time jobs like writing obituaries and press releases for a local center, delivering sandwiches, and working as an office boy. At age 15, Lee entered a high school essay competition sponsored by the New York Herald Tribune and won. Well, he graduated from high school early, age 16 and a half, and with the help of his uncle, he got a job at Timely Comics, a comic book publisher. Timely would eventually become Marvel Comics. His first duties were making sure the writers had ink for their writing, getting the writers lunches, and some proofreading. But along the way, he started to write his own comics. He wrote one called Captain America. But before he could write more, he entered the Army to fight in World War II. While serving, he would write some comics and send them home. But at the end of the war, he was wholly dissatisfied with his career and considered quitting the field of work altogether. For another 6 years, he continued to write and work for what was then known as Atlas Comics. The company had had success with characters like Flash and Justice League. It was then that the publisher assigned Lee to come up with a new superhero team. Lee's wife told him, "You might as well come up with some stories you believe in and not what you think your publisher wants to read because you're thinking of quitting anyway." So, 20 plus years into his career, tired of his work, thinking he was going to quit and pursue another industry, he started writing what he wanted to write. To that point in time, the comic stories written about heroes didn't show heroes with flaws or problems or human frailty. So, Lee introduced complex characters with tempers, fits of melancholy, and vanity. And the first team of these types of characters he created was the Fantastic Four. The Fantastic Four was an immediate success, and the popularity of the comic gave Lee more freedom to keep on creating. He then created the Hulk, Thor, Iron Man, and X-Men. Then came his most famous character, Spider-Man. And all of this led to the comic series, The Avengers. Lee's revolutionary approach extended beyond the characters and storylines to the way in which comic books engaged the readership and built a sense of community between fans and the creators. He released regular news about Marvel staff members and upcoming storylines. Lee remarked that his goal was for fans to think of the comic creators as friends. Well, Lee scripted, art directed, and edited most of Marvel's series. He would revitalize his character Captain America and started to create a social community around the world. He would go on to participate in the Marvel movies created from his characters before his death in 2018. While his life was not free from controversy and challenges, his life proves a simple lesson, that 20 years into his career, just when he was thinking of changing his career, he started again, this time free to write about any type of character he chose, and created a series of comic characters that would last for decades. In fact, the revenue from just movies about his characters have earned more than $31 billion at the box office. What about you? Have you ever started again? Have you ever been close to quitting, been discouraged or tired of starting over, and decided to start one more time? It happens to all of us, regardless of whether we're old or young. Maybe you've worked hard and tried to plan everything ahead, and while some of your friends were taking it easy, you were building your business. But here you are, and maybe they've had success, and you're starting over, rebuilding. It just doesn't seem fair. And this holds some of us back from trying again. So if you've ever felt like this, here's the thing. Life doesn't care if you start early or late. It's never too late or too early to start again and give something your best effort or reinvent yourself in ways you may have thought were impossible before. In a world obsessed with milestones and deadlines and timelines, it's easy to fall into the trap of believing that success must come early or not at all. We hear of teenage tech moguls and Olympic athletes barely out of high school and musical prodigies who master instruments before they can drive. But we're subtly taught that if we haven't made it by a certain age, we've missed out on our chance. But life doesn't operate on a rigid clock. Life doesn't care if you start early or late. It only responds to what you bring when you show up. Now, perhaps you're building a business and you didn't get off to the start you wanted. Maybe you are 2 or 3 years into the effort without much success. You know, there isn't a scripted timeline. You can start again at any time. You didn't miss the boat. You can still find your way because it was never a race. In life, we all take different roads, and some roads need more time. Now, this idea can be both liberating and humbling. It suggests that we can begin again at any time and that starting early is no guarantee of happiness or longevity. It reminds us that life rewards persistence, authenticity, and grit over perfect timing. Whether you're 17 or 70, what matters is that you start. It's true, some people hit their stride early, but for every early bloomer who remains in the spotlight, there are many who burn out, plateau, or change paths altogether. Consider the story of Tatum O'Neill, the youngest person to ever win an Academy Award at age 10. Her early success didn't guarantee an easy path through life. In fact, it brought pressure and scrutiny that derailed her personal development for years. The same's true in sports. Many athletes are groomed from a young age to peak in their teens or 20s. But what happens after? If they've been defined solely by early success, they often face identity crises once their golden years pass. Early success can be powerful, but it can also be a trap, making people believe their value lies only in timing. Then there are the late bloomers, people who spent decades climbing invisible ladders or wandering winding paths before finding their place. Consider Grandma Moses, who began painting in earnest at age 78, after arthritis made embroidery too painful, or Colonel Sanders, who franchised Kentucky Fried Chicken at age 62 after being rejected over 1,000 times. These stories aren't exceptions. They're proof that starting late is not only possible, but sometimes optimal. Life doesn't penalize you for arriving at your calling later than others. In fact, it might reward you because you have deeper wisdom, patience, and perspective. Late starters often bring rich life experience to their ventures, making their contributions more meaningful. You know, even in more ordinary settings, this principle applies. A single mother who finishes college at 40 is not less worthy of celebration than someone who graduated at 22. A man who confronts his addiction at 50 and finds peace after years of struggle has not wasted his life. He reclaimed it. Life gives us windows of opportunity, but it also gives us doors. And those doors don't close just because the world says they should. Ray Kroc was a 52-year-old milkshake machine salesman. And one day his company received a large order for 8 of his milkshake machines. And curious about what kind of restaurant would make 40 milkshakes at once, he decided to visit the establishment. When he arrived at the McDonald Brothers restaurant, he was amazed by what he saw. The McDonald brothers, Richard and Morris, had created a revolutionary system for preparing food. Their restaurant was unlike any Kroc had seen. They streamlined the process of making burgers, fries, and milkshakes, focusing on efficiency, speed, and consistency. And this allowed them to serve high-quality food quickly at a low cost. The kitchen was meticulously organized with a precise layout that enabled workers to move efficiently and produce food at an unprecedented pace. Kroc saw something in their system that the McDonald brothers themselves hadn't fully realized, a blueprint for a scalable business. He envisioned a future where there were McDonald's restaurants all across the United States, all operating with the same efficiency and delivering the same high-quality food. Despite the brothers' initial hesitation, Kroc convinced them to let him franchise their concept. In 1955, he opened the first McDonald's franchise in Illinois. Kroc worked tirelessly, expanding the chain one location at a time. He refined the business model, emphasizing uniformity across all franchises. Each McDonald's restaurant would offer the same menu, the same quality, and the same service, no matter where it was located. Kroc also introduced innovative practices to the franchise system. He established strict operational guidelines. He also invested in advertising, making the McDonald's brand synonymous with fast, reliable food. Well, over the next few years, McDonald's grew rapidly, transforming from a small regional chain to a national powerhouse. And by 1961, Kroc had bought out the McDonald's brothers, securing the rights to their name and system for $2.7 million. Last year, McDonald's had $23 billion in sales, all from curiosity about 8 milkshake machines from a man who was supposedly past his prime and in his 50s, but he was willing to seize the opportunity. Conversely, there are many examples of people early in life who did the same thing, seize the opportunity. French mathematician and philosopher Blaise Pascal began studying geometry as a young boy. By age 15, he had already developed what became known as Pascal's theorem, an essential principle in projective geometry. By his early 20s, he was helping to lay the groundwork for both modern probability theory and mechanical calculators. Wolfgang Mozart was a musical prodigy. He started composing at age 5, and by age 8, he had written his first symphony. Through his short life, he composed over 600 works that have endured for centuries. Rao, of Indian descent, was born in 2005 in Ohio and later moved with her parents to Colorado. There, she attended the STEM school Highlands Ranch. She was first influenced by a science kit her uncle gave her when she was 4 years old, and she gained confidence in STEM topics, and at age 10, she heard about the Flint water crisis while watching the news. The Flint water crisis was a health crisis between 2014 and 19, in which the drinking water in Flint, Michigan was being contaminated with lead and bacteria. Between 6 and 14,000 kids were exposed to drinking water with high levels of lead. While an extensive lead service pipe replacement effort was underway, there were still 500 service lines needed to be inspected and in place. By 2021, the residents, after so many broken promises, doubted the cleanliness of the water. And Rao became interested in ways to measure the water's cleanliness. She developed a device that could send water quality information via Bluetooth to a phone. She won the 3M Scientist Challenge with her invention, which helped the citizens of Flint. Then in college, she developed a diagnostic tool for early diagnosis of opioid addiction. Last year, she enrolled in MIT and got her pilot's license. She's also published her second book. She's a perfect example of how, at a young age, you can do many remarkable things. But for many of us, we think if it didn't happen early, it's not likely to happen. The obsession with early success often stems from comparison. We look sideways more than we look forward. A 25-year-old publishing a book or launching a company might seem remarkable, but it only points out that every journey is unique. Comparing timelines is like comparing seasons. Each one has a different role to play. Comparison also causes paralysis. Many people don't try new things because they feel it's too late. They believe the ship has sailed on a career or a relationship. Life isn't a rigid train schedule, it's a river. Sometimes the most beautiful currents take longer to find. Author and speaker Les Brown once said, "Too many of us are not living our dreams because we're living our fears. Fear of being late is one of the most paralyzing fears. But once we realize that life doesn't care when we start, that fear loses its power. It opens space for growth, courage, and possibility." Now, starting early might give you a head start, but starting late might give you depth. But neither guarantees success unless you're willing to keep showing up. Life doesn't reward you for being first, it rewards you for being faithful. Now, we can't control timing, and we can't control other people's journeys. All we can do is keep moving forward ourselves. In the end, life doesn't care if you started early or late. It cares that you started and that you showed up. You know, Julia Child wasn't raised in a foodie family. In fact, she didn't know how to cook until her mid-30s. And it wasn't until she moved to France with her husband at age 36 that she enrolled in culinary school and found her passion. She published her first cookbook at 49 and began her famous cooking show shortly thereafter. Today, she's a cultural icon, not because she started young, but because she found something she loved and leaned into it wholeheartedly. Before Vera Wang became one of the most recognized names in fashion, she was a figure skater and then editor at Vogue. She didn't enter the world of fashion design until she was 40 years old. Her first dress? Her own wedding gown. When she couldn't find one she loved, she designed it herself and then launched a business. Today, her designs are worn by celebrities, brides, and red carpet stars around the world. When Eric Weinmayer was a freshman in high school, one day he woke up to discover he'd lost his sight completely. He'd been going blind since he was a child, but now it had become a reality. At age 3 years old, he'd been diagnosed with retinal schisis. Low vision specialists had predicted that he would lose his sight sometime in his early teens, and he had. Eric became bitter and angry. He resented the fact that he could no longer see. He could hear everything that was going on around him, but because he couldn't see, he had to be escorted and led around school. And this was something he hated. He felt condemned. He didn't want to learn to use a cane. He was reluctant to learn Braille. He rejected help from other students, and he just felt pitiful. One author wrote, "One day, Eric was riding home from school in a van designated for disabled students by the district. As was his habit at the time, Eric was complaining to the driver. Eric told the driver he wasn't blind and that he belonged on a bus with his sighted friends. The driver, having grown tired of Eric's constant haranguing, pulled off to the side of the road and had Eric step from the van. Suddenly, Eric felt a basketball bounce off his face. The driver stated, 'Eric, you can't catch a basketball. You're blind.' The words were harsh, but they were true. Then the driver instructed Eric to hold out his hands, preparing him to catch the ball. He threw the basketball, and Eric caught it in his readied hands. The driver said, 'Eric, stop fighting people. Let people help you.' And thanks to his driver's brutal honesty, Eric finally saw the reality of his situation and decided to start anew. From that day forward, Eric wanted to define himself by what he could do, not by what he couldn't. He would later write, 'The things I could not do, I would let go. But the things I could do, I would learn to do well.' And this was a shift that prompted Eric to try out for the wrestling team. In his first year of wrestling, he ran 0 matches and lost 15. By his senior year, he would notch 33 victories and be named the team captain. He would later compete in the National Junior Freestyle Championships. Despite losing his mother, a devastating loss for Eric, he continued to let what was inside him guide him. He took up rock climbing. Soon he was climbing all over the country and set an eventual goal to climb the 7 highest peaks in the world. Well, it took him 19 days to reach the summit of Denali, but he did. Then he went on to climb the highest mountain in South America, then Kilimanjaro. And with a team of climbers who climbed with him regularly, Eric became the first blind person to reach the summit of Everest. Here's the point. We can start at any point. We can start in any condition. Starting is the most important thing. So, what about you? Whether it's your business, your habits, your career, or anything else, have you been hanging on to excuses and not starting? We've all experienced this. Life will knock the wind out of you and me. Plans fall apart, people change, health fades, careers end, and sometimes our first or even second start didn't go as planned. But just as life is indifferent to when we begin, it's also indifferent to how often we begin. Life doesn't care about excuses, and it doesn't care about what happened in the past. It only cares about what happens in the future. You know, sometimes starting again means going back to school in your 30s or 40s, apologizing and rebuilding a relationship you thought was over, choosing discipline after years of being addicted or exercising poor habits, trying something completely new, knowing you might fail. Life won't always make it easy, but it will make it possible. It may not open the same doors, but it will open other doors. And sometimes starting over requires we deal with the emotions of it all. In considering our past attempts to start over, it can feel like grief, fear, embarrassment, or exhaustion. And sometimes it feels like starting at the bottom of a mountain you've already climbed once, wondering if you have the strength to try again. And if you're like me, you may feel regret for what didn't work out, shame for needing to restart when others keep going, fear of wasting more time or failing again, loneliness, especially if your support system has changed, or even bitterness, wondering why you have to start over at all. But here's the thing. These feelings are normal. And here's a few things we can all remember. Starting over often means admitting something ended. A job, a relationship, a dream, or a version of yourself. Don't confuse loss with defeat. The end of one chapter doesn't mean the story's over. It just means the next one is ready to be written. Give yourself permission to say, that mattered, it hurt, but I'm still here and I'm not done. One of the deepest sources of emotional pain when starting over is the false belief that I should be further along by now. Life is not a race and you are not behind. Your worth is not tied to how early or how clean your path has been. You're not less valuable because your journey has included restarts. If anything, you're more resilient, more experienced, and more equipped. And the way you talk to yourself during a restart matters. Maybe you say, this is hard, but I've done hard things before. This is not where I thought I'd be, but I can still build something good. Starting over isn't failure. It's proof I'm still fighting. And here's something that I've learned. If you're building a business and thinking of starting over, remember, more people are starting over than you think. They just don't always talk about it. You don't have to navigate this alone. Tell someone what you're going through. Find others who are rebuilding too. Join a group, a class, or a community where showing up imperfectly is celebrated. And remember, progress is easier when you don't carry it all by yourself. And I've learned this. There are so many of us who have had a success or two, but now we're facing the prospect of having to repeat that success. And it's extremely scary because maybe you think the first time around you got a little lucky. This time, it seems like your luck may have passed. After writing The Hobbit, because of the book's success, Tolkien's publisher, Stanley Unwin, asked him to write a sequel. Well, Tolkien set to writing in the fall of 1937, and he wrote the first chapter in a month, which was breakneck speed for him. But then he stalled. When Bilbo Baggins disappeared from his own birthday party, Tolkien had no idea where Bilbo was going or why. He didn't have a story in mind. He finally decided the story was about Bilbo's ring, but he knew less about the ring than Bilbo. C.S. Lewis and Tolkien often met on Monday mornings to discuss their common interests. And in these discussions, Tolkien was open to Lewis's thoughts and ideas. He could have said, I know better. I just published a successful book. But from Lewis, Tolkien got the idea of Bilbo's ring was a ring of power. And it was Lewis who pushed Tolkien at times to bring his ideas to life when Tolkien could get lost in his daydreams. Tolkien would later say, the unpayable debt that I owe to Lewis was not his influence as it is ordinarily understood, but his sheer encouragement. He was for long my only audience. Only from him did I ever get ideas that my stuff could be more than a private hobby. But for his interest and unceasing eagerness, I would have never brought The Lord of the Rings to a conclusion. The Lord of the Rings would go on to sell 150 million copies, be published in 38 languages, and made into a best-selling series of movies. All because he sought a frequent audience with Lewis and he was open to his friend's guidance. When we are starting over ourselves or seeing others starting over, it's critical to remember that we all need some encouragement and we can lend our faith to each other. So as we end today, if you need to start something anew and try again, remember, life doesn't care about your age, your number of prior attempts at starting again, or your experience or other things. What matters is that you try again and watch. This may be the time when you rise to build your business, overcome your habit, or reach the goals you have set for yourself in life. Most of all, thanks for being here today. And be sure to join us next week as we seek to open our eyes to who and what we can become.